Hey, everyone. Happy to have you here for another episode of Legacy Matters. Today, as usual, we will talk about whatever comes up with a slight leaning toward discussions of preserving your legacy, preparing for things to come, and sharing stories we find amusing.
All right, everyone. thanks for showing up. This is Legacy Matters Live. This is our second show here at the 331 in Northeast Minneapolis. I don't know what to say other than we do love coming to this venue. I think it's a raucous crowd tonight. Thanks for showing up. Yeah!
Well, we do love the 331. We're here every week, so.
Yeah, yes. We usually start.
Thank you, Jarrett.
Thank you, Jarrett.
Yep.
We usually start our shows with a little weather report, and I think it's worth doing that today only because it is sweltering. Jim?
Okay, so I do a little weather report because we're here in Minnesota, and, you know, it is the day before fall, and it is 80 degrees and muggy and very hot, and tomorrow will be 50 degrees, so it's
good
classic
Minnesota.
Minnesota, where it changes one day to the next, so.
It
here
does.
We are. 331.
Weather check.
Yep. That's
and
our weather.
Sarah, you can tell us who we've got with us tonight.
We have some special guests here with us tonight. We have Venus DeMars.
Hello.
Leader, founder of All the Pretty Horses.
That's right.
And she was our guest on Legacy Matters podcast number 52. Check it out. And we loved her so much that we invited her back for a live podcast.
Yay.
And we're very excited to have her wife, Lynette. And Lynette, I may speak this incorrectly.
Do you want me to pronounce it for you?
Please.
My last name is pronounced Rainy Grandel. It's Finnish, so think of reindeer.
Rainy Grandel. We were super close.
We were very close,
very
nervous.
I know.
That's why
Jim gave it to me. Okay. So Lynette is a writer, teacher, and a poet. She's the author of Wild Verge and Approaching the Gate, which won the 2015 Northeastern Minnesota Book Award for Poetry. And both Venus and Lynette are working on their memoirs, which we're excited for them to share a little tidbit and a sneak peek with us tonight. I also wanted to share there's a full-length feature documentary about their relationship called Venus to Mars by Emily Goldberg,
Venus
which is toured film
Mars.
Festivals around the world. Did I get that
Venus
right?
Venus of Mars.
Venus of Mars.
Yes.
There we go. That's
it's
what
a,
we
it's
have
a
here.
Little clever play.
That is a very clever play. I like that.
So check that out. But thank you both for being here.
Yes. Thank you.
And we're excited to have you here. And Lynette's going to start off, and we're just going to, you know, do a little reading, a little music, and whatnot.
Okay. This is a little poem, and I think it's got some issues about relationships in it, if you listen carefully. What the rain brings. A violin's short strings, plunking first, then its massive welter to a thunderstorm. Are you afraid of rivers? Are you afraid of drowning? Once, when I went to see the swelling creek, drawn to all its brimming swirls, I slipped and I fell in. My rubber boots churned against the flow. My half-sized body yearned to stand upright. Somehow my hands gripped the muddy bank. No, they gripped the tall grass rooted there. I pulled myself away from that round culvert flowing underneath the street and down the hill, pulled myself out of the foaming creek, headstrong in its fight to see the lake. Are you afraid of death? Are you afraid of angry women? I am that angry woman. Don't be so afraid. My river has so much love in it. Sometimes it looks like rage.
Mm. Wow.
Can we ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
That was... What inspired that poem?
Well, it's kind of drawing on my childhood experiences of falling into a creek.
Mm.
But also, I performed at the Irish Fair August 9th, 10th, something like that. And we had just gotten back from Finland, 3 weeks away in Finland, working on our memoirs. And suddenly I was supposed to be reading poetry and with a group where we do improvisation with some jazz musicians. And I thought, I want to improvise something. And it was really wet. It was raining. Mm-hmm. And so I started with, you know, it's rain. It's what is the rain? Where does the rain come from? What is it saying? And I had a couple of things that rhyme. And then it started working its way into this.
So this is a fresh poem.
It's pretty fresh. It's this is probably a month old.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, with poetry, do you feel like it's obviously it comes very natural to you, but how long have you been you've been a poet?
You know, that's something I think about that a lot, actually, and I don't have a good answer for it. I could say it goes back to my childhood, except I didn't know any actual poets, and I didn't read any contemporary poetry until I was in college. Well, actually, no, past college, really at the end of college, probably not until I moved to the Twin Cities, and after Venus and I were married, I read very little contemporary poetry. I didn't know how to find it. But I loved singing, and I think that the songs I was singing led me to want to write poetry, and I was reading old poetry like Emily Dickinson. Mm-hmm. So I used to write like Emily Dickinson. Mm-hmm.
I have a question about the creek. I mean, so I grew up in the country, and when you talk about a culvert, did you actually fall in a creek that
yes.
terminated into a culvert?
Yes. So listeners, okay, so this took place, there's actually a name for the park, but nobody who lives in Duluth knows the name of the park. This is in the east end of Duluth. If you ever drive through Duluth, it borders Superior Street. And let's see, there's an area where there are no streets for a while, and then 43rd Avenue East would be like the eastern boundary of the park. It's one of those parks that's a little over a square block, maybe 2.5 square blocks, something like that. And it's a creek. It starts on Northland Country Club, actually probably before Northland Country Club. And when I was in, I want to say, gosh, when was I best friends with Mary Bradley?
Don't look at me.
I don't know, when I was in fifth grade, sixth grade, something like
15,
that.
20 years ago?
We were doing something like this. Well, and so I think this might have happened, honestly, I can't remember. Duluth had this major rainfall, you know, one of those storm of the centuries that we're having every day right now. But it was back probably in the 1960s. I think I was under 10. And it was a huge storm, and there was water everywhere, and nobody was paying a lot of attention to me, and I wanted to see the creek rise. And so I went to this place, and I was amazed. You know, it was probably, normally this was a little trickle, and this is probably 6 feet deeper than it should have been. And the culvert, this has to be sometime after I was in fifth grade or so, because I'd already walked through that culvert when it was a trickle. And so Mary Bradley, my best friend at the time, she and I had basically followed this stream to where it comes out at Lake Superior. And at this point in time, you know, the size of our bodies, I don't know how big the culvert would be now, maybe 4 or 5 feet in diameter. It was something where you could, as a child, I could put my hands on either side and my legs on either side of the little stream, and we could walk through it. It goes underneath Superior Street. And then you keep on following it. Eventually, you have to go into people's backyards, but we did that because we were kids. And we followed it out to Lake Superior. And when I was seeing this amazing flooded creek, I was impressed that the water was so high, it kind of had to go downhill to go inside the culvert.
Right.
And of course, it wasn't until I was an adult that I realized how
incredibly dangerous
it's amazing.
That was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
still here.
Yeah, exactly.
I grew up out in the country, just north of the cities out in Elk River, but we had a Tibbetts Brook was near our house, and it was a short bike ride. So I would go down and check it out. And I remember when one particular time, it was well flooded, and instead of it falling into it, it was underwater. So there was this swirling vortex sucking down. I just remember being terrified of the idea of even coming close to that thing, because that equaled certain death.
Well, you're a smart child. I was not terrified. I just got closer until I couldn't feel.
And you slipped into the creek.
Yeah.
Oh, that's scary stuff.
Yeah. And I'm just like a little aside, so I can bring Venus into the conversation. Venus, this is the same creek that flows through the backyard of the Bailey family.
My first drummer.
Yeah, they were like the three brothers were in your first major band.
Yes.
Straight Bass.
Yes, that was right.
So I wanted to ask, do you guys collaborate sometimes on songwriting?
No.
No?
Venus wants to write all the words she sings.
Okay.
So we don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't. We're terrible at collaborating. We do a nice back and forth if we're performing together. Mm-hmm. So
we call it tag team, you know, like all-star wrestling tag team.
Yeah. Well, this is right. Our
this is the little tag team
it
tonight,
is
yeah.
Like
yeah.
Tag
yeah,
team.
And this is our first time having a couple on and yep. So we get to poke the bear a little bit, right?
Oh, like you know, like the bear is already poked. We drove here in
I can tell. I love it. So
Venus, what would you like to share with us?
Oh,
are you ready?
I can, okay. But I've got it's memoir, so it's longer.
Do you want to?
Well, let's preface
a little bit.
Intro, into it a little bit.
Intro
about your like, memoir.
Let me just see. This is the.
You could give a little context.
We could at least say if you listen to the episode where we feature Venus, we talk about your memoir,
writing about
your memoir, and you guys are both in the process of doing separate ones.
We are doing separate ones, and this is a chapter essay that got accepted. Two of them got accepted for the Queer Voices. Publication anthology this year from the Historic Society, Minnesota Historical Society Press. Okay. And this one is a childhood memory, actually Duluth.
Okay.
So I'll try to see if I can read it a little faster or find a stopping point if it makes sense. So it's May 1970, Duluth, 53rd and Norwood. He insists that I am a girl. I tell him that no, I'm not. But he insists. He adds that his brother says so, and I can see he is getting angry with me. So I don't argue anymore. Or I lessen my argument because he is younger than me, maybe 2 years younger, which would make him maybe 8 years old, and I can tell I may not be able to dissuade him, and I really don't want to meet his brother. So I stop talking and instead shift my focus to the kite. I'm flying now so high in the air that I can barely see it. I am older and wiser than him anyway, and taller, like a foot taller. He takes my silence as confirmation that indeed I was just fooling him, and now that he's won the argument, he also turns his attention to the kite, or actually to why I'm holding a stick with a string tied around it, and I explain that I'm flying a kite, and he says, no, I'm not, because he can't see it. But he's still curious as to why the string looks as if it's going into the air. I tell him to follow the string up as far as he can see, and then to look really carefully, and he finally sees the kite. And he becomes absorbed by it, and asks how I got it up there so high, and if I might let him hold the stick with the string tied around it, and I say, okay. I hand it to him and say to be careful not to let go. He is amazed at how much the kite pulls against his grasp, and then I take it back. It's misting and cool and muggy out. The sky is gray and the clouds drift. I am wearing my jeans and tennies and my gray zipper sweatshirt jacket with its pointy hood up. And I'm wearing nothing underneath because it's so muggy. And also because of that, I have the zipper unzipped down to mid-chest, and I can see this boy, I don't know, look again at my thin, hairless chest, and now I understand maybe why he's confused. And maybe I feel kind of okay with his confusion. Yes, I'm okay with his confusion. I find myself wishing he is right and that I am just pretending. But now his focus has shifted and he's more interested in the kite than me and asks all the questions he can think of. So I answer as best I can. I tell him how I built it and how I run to get it to go into the air. I tell him I run for 2 blocks to do it, then walk back a block to where I am now with the kite way up in the air. And then I explain how if I time my running and raise it higher and higher by letting out the string and running again, if it begins to drop, eventually I can get it high enough, like I have today, that it never drops and the wind never quits. And I can just stand and hold the stick with the string for as long as I want. I see he has lost track of what I'm telling him and now wants to leave. So he waves goodbye and runs down the avenue, dodging puddles as he goes, calling back once to ask if I'll be here tomorrow. And I say I don't know, and he waves again, turns, and is gone. Mist beads on my hands and face. I am glad I'm alone again. I'm glad his brother didn't follow him, and I'm glad no one who knows me calls to ruin this accidental agreement which this boy I don't know and I have made. And as I watch the kite way up in the sky, I remember Max from last summer, the other boy I don't know, the one who last year, as I am playing with other boys at Todd's house, arrives from down the street wearing a dress. None of us knows him. He asks if he can join us, and Todd or someone says yes. And someone else asks what his name is, and he tells us it's Max, and to never mind that he's wearing a dress because he doesn't want to, but his mom makes him wear it every day, even though he's a boy. And then I want to be Max's friend. And I wonder why Max's mother would make him wear a dress. And I wish my mother would make me wear a dress. And then someone whispers in my ear that Max isn't really a boy. He whispers that she's just some girl from a few blocks away and that he's seen her before and her name isn't Max. But he doesn't know what her real name is. He tells me that they always play the same game with her, and I should join them in playing it because it's a trick on her. Then he warns me not to ruin anything. And I don't know these other boys, but I know Todd from school, and I had only come up this far along Glendale Street to see him, not everyone else. And I'm unsure as to what to do, but the game is starting, and I am being pulled in. Kevin, I think, one of the maybe 6 boys at Todd's yard, calls to line up for the game. This other boy, the whispering one, quietly explains the rules. It involves each boy back crawling between a single standing boy's spread legs apart. A fast-moving, non-stop, snake-like circle of ground-level, back-shuttling group movement, quick up and run, then drop and crawl, elbow-digging, heel-kicking, fast-moving circle of 9-year-old boys. I've never heard of this made-up game before, and I'm feeling vaguely uncomfortable, and I wish Todd had been here alone instead of with all these other boys I don't know, but I still want to be Max's friend, so I stay anyway. This whispering boy finishes with a final explanation. He points out this is how we can all see Max's underwear. Though he doesn't say Max's underwear. Instead, he says her underwear. And I'm still thinking of her as Max, and maybe Max is like me, I think. And maybe after the game, Max and I can talk.
Should we wait?
Oh, that's fantastic.
It gets into it.
And that's your writing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm writing I'm writing in a child's voice.
But is it your a memory of yours from your
youth? It is. Yeah. It's for real.
Were you obviously you're a songwriter, but were you a writer like this before you started doing your memoir?
No, not really. I had done some poetry and I had done some other prose writing, but I started with the idea, of course, way, way back there, about maybe 10 years ago, to start writing a memoir. And but it wasn't my art form, so I struggled just writing horrible, horrible stuff for years and years and getting discouraged and then doing it again and blah, blah, blah. And in the meantime, everybody else started writing memoirs, and then they wrote rock and roll memoirs, and they wrote trans coming out memoirs, and then I felt like I was missing the boat. So I really buckled down and worked, and I began to develop a voice and a style of writing, which I felt good about. Mm-hmm. And so now I am writing the memoir, and I'm maybe halfway through the first draft of the manuscript, but I have to write a different story than the coming out trans story or the rock and roll story. So it's kind of, it's a story working also alongside Lynette writing her memoir. It's a story about our relationship, and it's a story about survival and being in a rock and roll band that doesn't make it. So there's a failure story.
Everybody needs one of those.
And but it's quite an adventure. Because I came out as trans way before it was cool in the music industry.
Is it cool now? Is that is that good?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We did touch upon this on the podcast where we're talking about you as a trailblazer and a mentor. You know, it's hard. I think you're a very humble person. And it's hard for someone to say, yes, I am a mentor and a trailblazer, but you have become that person, whether or not you set out to be that way.
I think it was an accidental stumbling into, I was just trying to be a rock star.
And be yourself.
And
right?
be myself. Mm-hmm. And struggling like hell against an industry that had no room for me. So, and my band, over the years, and all the different eras and variations, one member who is out here.
Oh.
The freak.
Stayed with me and kind of rode the dragon all the way through it. It has been a ride which is very unpredictable, and we always felt rewarded by the audience and the reaction to us, but we could never get to that place where we could kind of coast. We always had to fight. So is that a bad thing? I don't know. It was a frustrating thing for me for a long time. Mm-hmm. But I got a lot of music out of it.
Yeah,
so.
It makes you creative, very creative, right?
So Venus, when you're thinking going back in time like this, I mean, your writing is very specific. I mean, you have some really detailed accounts. I mean, how does that form? Like, how do you find that space to go back and kind of remember?
Ah, well, that's interesting. I'm actually writing on an essay right now about our second tour to the United Kingdom, and I convinced my band to do a layover in Iceland for 4 days, but I didn't really know how expensive Iceland was back then. This is in 2003. And it was at the height of their financial bubble, which crashed a few years later. So it was terribly expensive. I had no clue. And so I'm writing about that. And what I've done for the last couple of weeks is just to go back and live during that time and the particular incident. It's 4 days, and I'm kind of starting it out with waking up with jet lag, having no clue where I am. And my bass player, Eden, at that time is sharing the room with me, and she's in the bed across from me, but I have no clue where I am. And it's Iceland in November, so it is pitch dark out, and it almost is for most of the day. So I spend the beginning just trying to figure out where I am and coming out of this dream state. And then we have some very interesting experiences, challenging experiences from being Americans in the Bush era America.
Yeah.
So we're not terribly welcome. and then being trans slightly, but not so much for that time. But so I'm writing about that. But I spend most of my time trying to get back and trying to just live that time. So
right.
I try to remember what I could smell. Try to remember what the temperature of the air was like. Mm-hmm. I try to remember what clothing I might have been wearing. And I also made this crazy extensive timeline based on our gig lists, which I kept track of for years. So we both refer to this crazy extensive timeline.
Yeah, I was late getting on the memoir bandwagon. I only started up, 3 years ago
now,
I think?
Yeah, I was going to ask if you came later with that.
Yeah, I mean, I considered myself a poet, and I didn't feel like I wanted to tell this story because it didn't feel like it was over yet. I couldn't see how it could be compartmentalized. Finally, a friend of mine, really good friend of mine, convinced me to try it. But by then, Venus had made this amazing timeline. I was like, oh, I want to look at that. And it's been really useful because we can check with each other and verify like what was happening when and adjust things on the timeline. And Venus, your timeline started with just a particular set of years when the band was performing.
Right.
But you've expanded it quite a bit now because my memoir is covering a lot more time.
Yeah, you go back farther. So I was able to create it from, I did these emailings every month, a couple times a month, and one of my fans from the band had saved all of those emails for like 6 years, and he downloaded them all and sent them to me, so I had like crazy information, detailed information, month to month for about 6 years. So I created it from that at first, but then we've kind of done research and then created the previous and then some of the after. So, and look, it's really revealing.
Yeah, look, are you going to say this or do you want me to?
No, you go ahead.
One of the things we discovered looking at stuff on the timeline was how close things happened to each other that we thought were not very related, and then how far apart things were that we were putting together at almost the same time. I mean, it's really sobering because your memory is not very good, but you know, Venus had a lot of ability to fact check some of this stuff thanks to some mailing you'd done.
Well, I mean, I think it bears saying, or is worth saying, that we've created a memory preservation app. That's part of the reason we're here doing this.
Yeah.
And it's because of that very same stuff. I would have little to no recollection of, or correct recollection, I should say, of timeline.
And I'm just going to throw this in there because Sam is my uncle. I think we talked about this.
No, I'm right, your nephew.
Nephew. Oh, yikes.
Wow. All right.
Anyway, when I first met Sam, I remember this and you don't remember it.
No. I'm
and
sure
so
I don't.
That's what I'm saying. It's like my perception, I remember, you don't. So it's a specific moment.
And I had 20 years or so working with kids at a camp, and for me to put a timeline together of when I knew these kids, I mean, I love them. If any of them are listening, they're all like children to me in a lot of ways, but I don't remember if you were there in 96 or 2002. Yeah. I don't remember. I just know we had time together.
So, Venus, do you have photos of your childhood that you can kind of look at to jar memories too?
Yeah, I have some. Yeah. I got some film. Actually, the filmmaker for the documentary Venus of Mars used a lot of home movies, and my family was all and relatives. They were kind of into all the new technology, so we had like 8mm films and slides and all these images. So there's a bunch of photographs of me, little red haired kid that is running around and looking stupid. Yeah.
Yeah, we were all a little red-haired kids.
Yeah, underneath here, it was red hair, right?
Something, weren't we?
I haven't seen my red hair for a while.
Well, are you hard on yourself
actually,
as a
I do
child?
Every morning, but not up here.
Is your adult self hard on you as a child? Like, do you think fondly of yourself as a child?
I was. Oh well.
Not to take it too deep. I'm just curious.
So I knew I was, I didn't have words for it, but I knew I was trans, right, in a sense. I mean, I knew that I didn't fit the normal expectation.
Yep.
And so, but I tried to, because that's what I was supposed to do, and that's what everybody told me. And somehow I had this instinctual sense that if I didn't, there was something wrong or shameful. So, and I don't know where I got, honestly, I don't know where I got that, but I had that, and so I knew that that was a problem. So I look at photographs of myself trying to be real boy or doing all of that stuff, even though I know, you know, my memory, I am so far from that. It's kind of, I feel sad, and it's like hard to look at some of those old photographs.
I listen to...
Yeah, I just don't... It's not... It's like I know how difficult... Like, and then when it gets into like junior high school and that kind of thing, where I'm really working it, ugh, my God. It was so hard.
Those are the rough years.
Yeah.
I listened to a really fantastic show on... it was This American Life, but it was just on a different type of therapy for PTSD, and it was... really survivors of sexual assault and stuff like that, which is not necessarily anything that I'm trying to throw out there, but the deal with the therapy was like there was a big part of it that was kind of going back and explaining to your younger self like that it's okay. This idea of shame and all of that, that sticks with you, and if it sticks with you that long, that's probably detrimental.
I used to get my neighbor, friends, kids, boys to cross dress.
Yeah, which
I would
is,
do that.
Where's the harm in that? I feel like
it was great until their
fun,
parents
actually.
Caught me, and then I'd be the one in trouble, and they're in trouble.
Right.
But I remember doing that.
But as a parent, my kids don't get in trouble for that stuff anymore. Like, they, you know, there's a lot more freedom to explore those avenues these days than there was in the past.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. So,
oh, my God.
So your young self can be forgiven, too?
Yeah, yeah. I don't, you know, I wonder what my life would have been if I had, you know, the kind of support there is right now for trans kids growing up.
And you and Lynette have been married how long?
32
No, 30. It's more than that. 36
36
You're only off by a couple years.
I think. Wait, let me see. This is 2019. Just trying to do the math. What's 2019 minus 83?
Oh, we're terrible at math.
Good luck.
Oh, but huh? Is it? 36, yeah.
36.
Yeah, the mathematician over there.
So something worked out right.
That's amazing. That's more than I thought.
Yeah.
So, Lynette, I see you have your words in front of you. What do we have next?
Yeah,
here?
Yeah. Okay, so I'll read a little bit from my memoir in progress.
Yes.
So I think the only thing I need to explain in advance, and like Venus, I'll kind of trickle off after a page or two. The only thing I need to explain is that when most of my memoir is taking place, I know Venus as Steve, and I'm using a male pronoun for her. So, apologies. There we are. Chapter 1. It was the summer of 1998, and the first thing I noticed gazing at the hotel I'd booked for the band and me was that from the street, it didn't look much like a hotel. I was standing in a pile of amps, guitars, and suitcases, having just clambered out of one of a pair of cabs we had crowded into at JFK. And now we were standing on a busy sidewalk, hoping they'd dropped us at the right place. Construction scaffolding and a plywood fence jutted out onto the sidewalk where the hotel was supposed to be. Someone had painted the beckoning canvas of fence with large cartoonish figures, one of them a man with a big head in some kind of blue uniform, a doorman's uniform, next to a circle and slash through a familiar green H logo, an anti-Holiday Inn symbol. A red arrow to the doorman's left pointed to a door. I walked over to it, waving to the band to follow me. The metal grill door had several layers of paint on it. I peered through the glass to see a small tiled entry and stairs. I grasped the handle and tried the door, but it held. Locked. My husband, Steve, pushed a small white button next to the door, heard the click of the mechanism unlocking, and gestured to the rest of us to follow us in and up the stairs. I grabbed a guitar and started up, turning my head as I passed some film noirish silhouettes of a man and a woman, another of a crime scene outline, still another of a life-sized man pointing a revolver, something like Warhol's double Elvis picture, and more images, bumping the case's splintered edges into the brass railing every few feet around a narrow landing and landed into the lobby. The walls of the lobby were also murals, but a completely different style, more like gestural yellow and blue-filled line cartoons against a green background. Near the top of the ceiling, someone had painted a faux medieval frieze and timbering. At an alcove to my left, a small seated golden Buddha sat on a ledge. The narrow stairs, chipped to reveal color, layers of different colored paint, continued their tight, squared-off turns upward to more floors. On the walls, leading to the next level, were more bold cartoons that looked like graffiti art against a red and black background, and I could see down another long hallway a similar variety of colors and textures. Someone opened a door a short way down the hall, and I could see wild swirls of dripped paint on its surface. Everything was art, as far as I could see. I felt a secret shudder of joy as I looked around in wonder at the avalanche of artistic expression we had walked into that now surrounded us. It was easy to see that these walls had not been a smooth canvas. Bulges, scrapes, and damaged trim were everywhere. I already knew what art cars were. Cars that had gotten so rusted and beat up that the poor artists who owned them said, screw it, and turned them into artistic expression on wheels. We'd done that with two of our own cars. Now I was inside a hotel where the same thing had happened, large scale. I was inside an art hotel. I think I'll stop there.
That's great.
What year is this?
1998.
Okay.
98. And that's, and the one interesting thing between that's a subject is that, yes, everybody knew me as Venus. That's what I was going with before I did legally change everything. Yeah. But Lynette, I never pushed Lynette to change that because it was still early. And there wasn't that kind of attitude in the trans. There was really hardly a trans community at all back then.
You had pitched the Venus name to me as a stage name. Other thing. Yeah,
I was soft-pedaling everything.
Right.
So we had this back and forth where people get confused because they wouldn't know who Lynette was referring to.
I think maybe in 98, I don't think you're even going by the Venus stage name yet.
Oh, let's get the timeline.
You'd have to check the timeline to be sure. But we've checked on this before, and it's kind of surprisingly late where that happens.
It might. It's in the 90s.
Might have been a year later.
Lynette, you were still referring to Venus as Steve.
Yeah.
All the way for quite a while.
Yeah.
Quite a while. So that got to be an interesting back and forth. My producer, Barb, we talk about this. When I first met her, she was a bartender in New York at a club called the Meow Mix, which is a lesbian bar out there. And
of course,
that's a great name.
Oh, it is.
If you've ever seen I think it's the first. Oh, what's the name? Chasing Amy. Yeah, it's yeah. It takes place there. Yeah.
So it was an iconic bar there. Tiny. All the bars out in New York seem to be tiny, and she was a bartender there, and that was one of the first anchor gigs that I had put together to get us out to New York, and we were setting up out there. And Lynette was at this hotel, as she talks about, called the Carlton Arms. On 25th and 3rd, it's still there, and we have an installation in one of the rooms. It's great. Everybody should go there. She calls the because this is before cell phones, and she calls the bar to find out where I'm at, and it's just me and the band. We're setting up, and Barb, the bartender, and she picks up the phone, and Lynette says, "Is there somebody there named Steve?"
And I probably said Steve Grandel.
And she's looking around, and she just sees trans people and women. That was my band. And she says, "I don't think there's anybody here named Steve." And Lynette said, "Just call it out." And so I'm looking over, and I see her hold up the phone and just said, "Is there a Steve in the house?" Like this. And I'm like, "Oh, great." So I walk over.
You're
and,
like this.
Yeah, and I walk over, and she looks at me like, "Oh, my God." And then she's like right there. She says, "I have to know who this person is." So we got to be friends, and now she's my producer. So yeah.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and she's all over the country now doing stuff. She's graduated from being the bartender at the Meow Mix. No longer. All she does is produce now. So yeah.
Well, I feel like this is a tiny bit self-serving, and I think I went into this on our last show. But I feel like your journey kind of having to come out and change all of these things, and Lynette, your journey having to live through Steve not being Steve anymore, and all the rest of it. Like, I feel like my hangups. So if I can be frank about it, I've got zero trouble with people's sexuality, nor with them changing their sex. None of it matters to me. I really just don't care. And I shouldn't say I don't care. I think that everyone should live the life that they want to live. And that's innate in all of us, that we should be able to do that. But what I do get confused about, because I can't remember my own cousins' names when I go to a family reunion.
That's why you created a memory.
I know. It's terrible. And I have these other things. I get in my own head about whether I'm going to do the right thing or not, whether I'm going to say the right thing or act the right way or be awkward in some way that makes the entire situation uncomfortable. Therefore, I may avoid the situation. And I feel like now, having two conversations with you and having your wife here, I can get over my shit a little bit, like, which is important, because it really, I don't want my things to be your things, because they're not maybe what they appear to be, you know?
Well,
does it make sense?
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing. I mean, it was a discussion as we've been writing the memoir about how, with your writing group, about what you should do.
Right, right. I mean, I wrote this with Venus Everywhere, and then I wrote it with Venus and the they pronoun. And then you decided to go through the surgery and have the legal name and gender change, and that just happened recently. That's just been, well, it's been a little over a year now.
It'll be my birthday.
So then I changed it, but except in the memoir, it doesn't make sense if I say Venus and she, if that's not how I was seeing my spouse at the time. So I have to do some telescoping. I have to do, you know, like there's some stuff I've got near the beginning, you know, that this person would get to be known as Venus, and, you know, all of this stuff. But now, you know, here's how I knew this person then. And then it, you know, so I'm going to have to show that struggle back and forth. And at a certain point, I mean, it was an issue because the fans were giving me dirty looks. Hmm. And then I would ask Venus, well, what should I call you? Because, you know, everybody's giving me a dirty look, but, you know, to me, that's your stage name. And, you know, that's like, that's creating distance, you know, because right. that's how I saw it. And so, and then you didn't want to push me to do anything. You said, well, whatever you want. I mean, even when people would ask you which pronoun to use, you wouldn't give them an answer. You'd speak a couple of paragraphs. Yeah. And wouldn't give them a definitive answer, which I thought was hilarious. Except it was a problem.
But that this was all in like this was still pretty early, so it was the community and the culture about trans was developing and being written really. So none of us really knew exactly what. Protocol was we were creating protocol.
But I think when you even talk about that, there's not really a separation necessarily between the community of trans and the community of hetero or something. Like we all have to if our main goal is to understand one another and to be compassionate and empathetic and to just figure things out, then if your wife is struggling with it, then I feel right. like. Well, shit. Who am I to yeah. who am I to worry yeah. about me and my role in it, right? But at the same time, now you've got an opportunity. I feel like for all the seeming lack of progress that we kind of feel like we're going through right now, there has been true progress, and I think each of these conversations leads to more of that progress.
Well, I think. Oh, go ahead.
Yes, progress and then tunneling back, because when I'm writing my memoir, I'm going back to when I'm like still trying to grapple with what I'm going to do, who I am.
Absolutely.
And where because I would go through plateaus where I would be totally cool right here. And then I would like, no, I got to do more. So then I would do more to alter my body. And then I would be, okay, I'm all right now. And then I would be there for another year or two or three, and then it would be like, no, I can't do this anymore. So then I would go through these plateaus, and it was driving Lynette up a wall because she thought I would be fine, and I would feel fine, and then everything would change. And so she felt like I just kept changing. I was kind of
I can
like,
only imagine. Yeah, that's quite a metamorphosis, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, I made a joke. It was kind of like living with Loki. I'm always changing.
Well, do you guys have something you want to say? I mean, we should.
Well, we were going to have. See, it's Venus, great. If you'd like to read another piece.
And then we're going to have you. Play. We're going to have you sing here in a little bit too.
Oh,
if
yes.
That's,
oh,
I could. That's do, cool. Yeah. So we'll take. We want to maybe another reading from both of you, and then.
Yep.
And then
we'll do a quick break.
Quick
so you
break,
can set up.
And then we'll set you up and get.
Why don't you have Lynette read something? Maybe.
Okay. By the way, these are great, and so this memoir is coming out. As a single book, it's a tandem.
No, it's
separate.
Two individual
separate books, but
they will echo against each mm-hmm. other because we're using the same timeline.
It'll be mm-hmm. interesting to see the difference between those two stories. No doubt.
All right, I'm just paging through. I also brought my iPad for the whole thing, but that's going to be too long to go through. I think let's see if this gets enough. Okay, so this is still part of the same chapter, I think. And what I've done up to this point from when I stopped is I've sort of gone back into my childhood, college years, and wanting to be an artist, writer, whatever. And I actually did try to spend a summer in New York that didn't work because I didn't get the house sitting gigs I was supposed to get, and I didn't find the temp job I was supposed to get. So I had to ride the Greyhound bus back to Duluth and spend the rest of the summer in Duluth.
Classic.
Okay. So, okay, here we are back after that. Perhaps going to New York a second time when I discovered the Carlton Arms was a kind of fulfillment to a promise I made to my younger self. I wouldn't have to go back home defeated. Now I knew how to find a place to stay. ATMs existed, and I had credit cards. It also felt like the right place to be, a place of artistic energy I'd once sought. but it would be years before I turned up there. Still trying to figure out how to become a writer, I married an artist who ended up being better known as a musician. By the time we were hauling heavy equipment up the stairs together at the Carlton Arms Art Hotel, our relationship had already experienced a lot of ups and downs. And I'm using poems, fragments of poems as transitions. So here's a fragment. When we lay under the car, wondering if the beam that held up the 400-pound engine was strong enough, we both rolled on the concrete and laughed. The idea of working beneath all that weight and still being alive. Most people looking at our relationship from the outside tended to attribute any conflict between us as stemming from the fact that Steve, who much later would be known as Venus, was transgender, a kind of catch-all term to describe people at various points on the gender non-conforming continuum, all the way from cross-dressing to gender ambiguous to taking hormones to full-on surgical change. Steve didn't have the courage to admit to himself that he was transgender, let alone me, until we'd been married 5 years, about 10 years before we found ourselves at the Carlton Arms. Neither of us had the language for it, or even understood it was a possibility back then. 10 years into it, as we stood around the lobby, assessing where to move the gear to next, Steve had begun going more by his stage name, Venus. Initially, I found that amusing, like a game everyone played in the music business. He'd had a different cross-dressing name, too, Sonia. But by this time, I didn't want him to be called, calling him Venus. There was distance in it every time I felt the name on my lips, as if I was the one, as if I was one in a massive audience on the floor, looking up at an untouchable person on the stage. I'll just stop there.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, that gets you. That's good.
Okay. I found. I'll just see how far I go on this one.
Sure.
Yep.
This is later, 2002. Fall evening. It's titled "An Endurance." We both arrive, Lynette and I, and traverse the loading dock. We pass through the heavy red main entrance door and descend the narrow cement basement stairs. I notice the age of the warehouse, the dirt on the floor, along the walls. I see loading cart damage, wall boards blackened with scars, holes broken through, the damaged lines, the length of the narrow basement hallways, mid-calf in height. I notice the dim Edison bulb set in the ceiling there and there, at each crosswalk, each corner, each door. At the entrance to the studio, we knock. A lock mechanism clicks. She tells us to come in. We enter, shut the door behind. We see them then. She standing, smiling, him kneeling, head bowed, covered fully in black leather. She stands, she tells him to stand up. He stands. She tells him to say hello. He whispers hello. His whisper is barely audible. We greet them, thank her for letting us observe their session. She is asking Lynette if this is for her book, then adds specifically if it's for the novel she's writing. Her inquisition is more a statement than a question. She continues by telling Lynette that of course it's important to get things right, and that she trusts us both. At this, she shifts her statement to the two of us. She is telling us that he knows both of us, and that she would not have agreed if he hadn't. Then she pauses. Then adds almost as an afterthought that of course she wouldn't have agreed if he hadn't also agreed. She finishes by telling us that he did agree and finally that he is happy it was us. We offer another thank you in readdressing her, but as I give mine, I direct it a bit more towards him. He lifts his head, only enough for his eyes to catch mine, holds them for a second, then lets go. He refocuses on Lynette, holds again, and lets go again. Then he turns his gaze gently back to the cement floor, resting his focus there. I feel recognition, despite the leather mask covering the sum of his facial features. His eyes deliver an individual distinction, and I feel it like a recognition from an unexpected taste or scent. Memories flood confirmation. Then descriptive inner language reaffirms the experience. Yes, I know him. She tells us now that we will begin. She states this almost as if it were a command rather than a simple statement. What follows is a series of endurances, physical and emotional, each with its beginning, each with its resolve. First one, then a second, then a third, then a fourth, and so on, like heel clicks on a sidewalk, like hammer strikes on a nail head, like a line of oncoming headlights blinding a pitch-black highway, first one, then the next. Pain is the rock star of endurance, with its glamour and drama. Skin as a canvas on which a painter aligns nerve endings, sews new texture or furrows a course fierce but thinly, deep enough to allow an addition of scarlet. The reassurance of touch may follow, like a warm hand laying gently on its surface, like the hand of the medical assistant laying gently on my left thigh as an act meant to offer acknowledgement of struggle, an endurance I undergo after too many bladder infections resulting from long avoidances of urination.
Stop there.
Well, you two, I really, really think this was a great conversation. I think we're going to have to do it again. I don't think there's enough time to get everything in.
Definitely not enough time.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I love having you read and then you read right next to each other, like how you guys kind of, you know, on your journey forward, you're both looking back at the same time and grabbing those memories and then pulling those, you know, sort of in sync. I mean, it's really quite wonderful to hear you both read and talk about the past and pulling it forward and then going forward.
There's a lot of layers to it also.
Yeah.
I mean, because of the band and the way I approached being trans on stage, we spent a fair amount of time in the fetish community.
Yep.
So there's a whole nother layer of exploration there.
Right.
But
you two are very much in sync. I mean, that's the thing that is really quite nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to be in a relationship, you know? I'm like, I was just had a moment. I was like, well, I should go home and maybe Amber and I should write down
nicer.
Some stuff,
yeah.
too, because that might help, you know?
A memoir.
Be prepared, though. It's like, you know, you have to re-explore the traumas in your relationship that you thought you wouldn't have to revisit again because you're trying to get the facts right.
Right, mm-hmm. And I love avoidance.
Yeah.
So I love not
that
remembering.
That sounds awful.
Yeah.
But yeah.
All right, you two. I think we should stop it there and we should let Venus get set up to sing a song
for us.
And then close it on that.
Yep.
So
right.
Thank you very, very much.
You guys
much.
Are wonderful.
Being here, both
More
of
to
you.
Come. More to come.
Please stay with us. After a short break, Venus will sing us a song. Today's show is brought to you by the Andelin app, a first-of-its-kind digital legacy preservation app that allows you to digitally attach photos, videos, and audio recordings to the places and objects you love. Imagine hearing your grandmother's voice telling the stories of your family heirlooms. Preserve your memories, prepare for the future, and share with those you love. Andelin, available in the App Store and Google Play. Visit andelin.app for more information.
Need some help with a construction project? Looking for thoughtful design and honest answers about what is possible and what is not? Kinetic Design Build is a full-service boutique remodeler servicing residential and commercial clients in the Twin Cities. Design and build with purpose. Visit kineticdesignbuild.com to request a consultation.
Packing for a trip? Let Pack Simply give you a little help by delivering travel-safe products directly to your door in an airport security-safe pouch. Unbelievably easy and surprisingly simple. Make your life easier. Visit PackSimply.com.
Interested in art? James Holmberg is both an artist and an art consultant. His strong connections in the Minnesota art world give him a unique perspective on the talented pool of artists from our region. Let James guide you to an original work that will come alive in your home. Visit JamesHolmberg.com to find out more.
All right. Do you want to go on a wilderness adventure with me, Sam? Or maybe you know a group of kids who could benefit from an extended break from their electronics. Or maybe you just need a break from those kids. Visit earthedfound.org for more information about how to get started.
For information about becoming a sponsor of Legacy Matters, please visit legacymatterspodcast.com.
Do it. I'm going to do it. Okay, this is a song everybody, well, a lot of people know, so I'm just going to do it. Take my hand, take my shoulder, I understand, I can hold you, I know you can, you're something bolder, there is no plan. It's getting colder. Oh, my brother, see my sister. There are no others, there is no difference. I could be you, you could be me. We struggle onwards and desperately. There's too much fear, there's too much hardness, there's too much here. It's never farthest. Stop your hate, stop your gun, stop your fighting. We are one. Brother, hold me, hold me, Father, hold me, hold me, Mother, hold me, Sister, hold me, Brother, hold me, hold me.
Hold me, Father, hold me. Hold me, Mother. Carry me, I'll carry you. We could be stronger, we could be true. Make me wise, make me breathe. Make me feel you. Make me grieve.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We love comments and feedback, so go ahead and let us have it. If you'd like to learn more about Andelin and other legacy projects, visit the website at andelin.app or kineticlegacy.us. Take care.